Now, thousands of women and children were among those who struggled to leave Singapore just before capitulation on February the 15th, 1942. Their hope was to reach safety. To tell us about her book, all about that, called Women Interned in World War II Sumatra, welcome to the show, Barbara Coombs.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you doing?
Fine, thank you very much for inviting me.
You're very welcome. Now, I think it's obvious why they wanted to do it, and sadly, for many, their hopes weren't realised because countless numbers, as we hear nowadays in certain situations, drowned, or the ships were bombed, or they got sunk, and they never made it to safety.
Yes, that is the sad fact. In fact, I think only one or two ships were captured. Most of them were bombed and sunk, and the women and children were in the water, and sometimes the women were in the water for days on end.
And for the lucky ones who did survive, Barbara, they would become guests of the Japanese. So did they survive the war then, or did they come to a sticky end as well?
No, many of them sadly didn't survive, obviously because the treatment and the food and the lack of medicine meant that many of them didn't survive. But one of the things that contributed to the demise was that for some bizarre reason, they were moved from camp to camp. And as they then got, as you know, the war progressed, and they got iller and iller, and then when they had to move, that exacerbated the death for a lot of them.
Yeah, very sad. Two women that did survive, though, two very different women, I have to say, Sheila Brown and Margaret Dryberg. First of all, can you tell us about Margaret?
Margaret didn't survive.
Oh, sorry, I do apologise.
You know, Margaret sadly died only a few months in the April before the end of the war in the Far East in August. Margaret was a missionary and extraordinary talent. She, when you look at a photograph of her, she looks quite stern, but she had the most amazing humour. But she also had this absolutely incredible musical ability. And also she would write poems for each of the women when it was their birthdays. And but she worked, of course, with Nora Chambers on what they called the vocal orchestra. So they rewrote over 30 pieces of classical music and then rearranged them for women's voices in four parts. So the women's voices became as instruments. And Margaret had an absolutely amazing memory, and they it really gave a lot of hope to a lot of the women when they first heard that.
Right, so she survived for a while, and what was the connection with Sheila Brown then?
The connection was that they were both, when they first moved in, when they were first captured, they were moved into what was the old Dutch houses, because obviously it was the Dutch East Indies. And when a group of them arrived, a lot of the houses had already been occupied. The women, the bungalows were for four people, but the women were packed in there at about 20, 24 into one small house. But when a particular group arrived, there was only one space left, and that was a garage, and that was Garage 9. And Sheila Brown and her mother were among this group. So they were in this very small little group in Garage 9 for about 18 months. And they became, I think, quite a tight little knit group, and tried to, when they were moved from place to place, they tried to keep together. But they also had, both of them, obviously Margaret was a missionary, so she had a strong faith. But Sheila also came from a strong faith background, and also had a wonderful singing voice, because she sang with the Singapore choir. And on the 5th of July, Margaret had composed a hymn, which was the captive's hymn, which was then sung throughout internment. And she for the very first time they sung, she asked Sheila and another internee in Garage 9, Dorothy McLeod, to sing it with her, to show the rest of the internees. And so that's really the connection.
And apparently this particular song that they sung has been continuing to be sung at services all over the world.
It has. It's been incredible. It's often been on BBC television. It's sung at various remembrance services right across the world, Australia and Canada, and obviously here in the UK. So it's, you know, the one thing that has kept going, and it is a remarkable hymn. And I think it kept everybody together during, you know, all those times when things got worse and worse as the years progressed. And I think it was the one thing, although the vocal orchestra, because they all got so ill, that was either dysentery, malaria, beriberi, but they did keep trying to sing the Cactus Hymn, because I think that gave them some sort of hope.
It must have really lifted their spirits, because, they obviously didn't have any instruments and not a great deal else to do. So it must have really lifted their spirits to use their voices as instruments and sing.
The comments from diaries from the women were that it just lifted them right out of that squalor and took them, back home right away from the dreadful conditions. And it really did. I think a lot of them did say, they would never have survived without Margaret, I think, because not only did she contribute to that, but she had this way of creating, they often did small plays and various things, and she would create quite a bit. And she would never perform herself, but she always would get other people to do it. And I think they all did say that Margaret really was the one that kept them all going.
Yeah. And did Sheila and Dorothy survive?
Dorothy didn't, no. Sheila did. Sheila was interned with her mother, Mary Brown, and Mary died, unfortunately, but Sheila survived. And Sheila had a most incredible post-war story that I think I've said in my book, that it really is worth a film. She, after she returned to the UK, someone that she met about four times on a rugby pitch, talking, it was a friend of her brother's, and she'd gone to watch him play rugby, because obviously children went backwards and forwards from Singapore to be educated in England, and then later on as a teenager she was back for a short while. And when she returned to the UK after the war, this young man, who had now been trained as a priest in Canada, had only met her, I think, three or four times, and wrote to her and asked her to marry him.
Ah.
And she then went, so she went from Sumatra in the heat. Within a year, she went over to Canada. She'd only met him four times in her entire life, and they were married within 2 weeks.
Blimey.
It really is an incredible story. But I think the one thing that I wanted also in the book is that a lot of people always thought that colonial people, they did have a good life, and it was, very pleasant, but there was also a downside. And the children were, sent back to school in the UK, often looked after by adoring grandparents. But it was quite tough on the children and on the parents. So there was a downside to this, image of a colonial life.
Yeah, of course. And what they went through, I mean, there were some appalling conditions, but they seemed to have a good deal of humour as well to get through it.
Yes, that was the one thing that when I first came across the story when I was looking for a dissertation for a master's in women's history, and I went to read originally some diaries in the Imperial War Museum, thinking that perhaps it would be too depressing and I wouldn't really want to, take on this topic. And I just came out on a high. The humour, and it was, there was, I think, at least four diaries within this very small group in Garage 9. And it was there, it just amazed me. I just was really hooked after that, the way they looked at themselves and they laughed at themselves and laughed at the situation. And, you know, I just don't know how they did that, because it was just appalling.
Yeah, must have been. And is that how you did most of your research, through diaries?
Some of it was through diaries. Sheila Brown's family, Sheila wrote a diary, and several other members of Garage 9 did. So I've read theirs as well. Margaret, we have got a published diary, and nobody knows where it came from. But so I used some of Margaret's diary as well. So, yes, basically diaries. And then for Margaret, she was a Presbyterian, which right. They are now the United Reformed Church. But all the Presbyterian records are in the School of Oriental and African Studies in London. So I spent a lot of time in the archives looking at Margaret's earlier life, because that's what I wanted. I didn't want internment just to define them. I wanted to find out who they were, you know.
Yeah, the characters.
Yes, what were they doing before? What were their lives like? And did something in their earlier life give them this tenacity and strength to cope? And that's what really sort of drove me to looking at their complete lives, not just internment.
Yeah, they say, don't they, that your early life shapes you into who you become.
Yes, absolutely. And I think Margaret, at 27, went off in 1919 to China. And, you know, that was just a year after women over 30 had got the vote. So that was, you've got to be quite a strong woman to do something like that. And all her experiences, you know, she witnessed so much during her time as a missionary. And then she went to Singapore in 1927, and she was a head teacher of a school there. So there's a lot of, you know, a lot of their background, which I think comes through in their later years.
Yeah, yeah. How did you find out about what happened in their later years? Because they wouldn't be in the diaries.
Margaret's was mostly from the Presbyterian records right up until she was interned. And Sheila Brown, the family have an amazing archive. Even there were letters written from Sheila, age 5, when she was first back in the UK, away from her parents going to school. So they even had copies of everything, you know, that they sent to each other. It's incredible records. And Sheila's, one of the chapters I've called, I Didn't Cry Today, because Sheila at age 5 was writing to her mother, and it was her birthday, and she said, well, I didn't cry today.
Oh,
and it's just heartbreaking.
Yeah, like this one day she didn't cry, bless her. Yeah, can you imagine? Yeah. And just one more question, Margaret. I know you said you did this for a dissertation, but why pick this subject? Because I personally have never even thought about this type of thing.
I have had an interest in World War II for quite a while. I did a small piece of research within the parish that I live in, looking at what some of the women there had done during World War II. And I've also had an interest in doing some research on names on war memorials in our local church. So somehow I knew that it would have to be something to do with World War II. And I don't actually remember how I came across this group, but they were the original group that Tenko, I think, probably.
Ah, yes.
Well, Tenko was based on this particular group of women.
Right. Wow.
And then when I was looking to connect with hopefully somebody that was still alive, I wrote to one of the women that was in Garage 9, Phyllis Briggs. Sadly, she had just died, but her daughter put me in touch with Sheila Brown's daughter, Margie Caldecott. And so through Margie, I sort of you know, obviously had access to the her family's archives. But because some years ago, when they were, before Tenko was put on television, the creator, Lavinia Warner, she was a researcher for the BBC, and they'd had a This Is Your Life program on Dame Margot Turner. And she came across the story, and so she knew Margie. And in 2013, we had what we think is the first vocal orchestra concert in the UK, because it was the 70th anniversary of the first time the vocal orchestra had sung.
Blimey, how interesting.
It's quite a complex story one way or the other, and Lavinia's written a foreword in the book.
Great stuff. Well, people can find out much more about this complex story from the book, which is called Women Interned in World War II Sumatra, Faith, Hope and Survival. It's out now, came out this month, and it's by Barbara Coombs, who we're speaking to now. And you can, of course, as always, buy it from our bookshop on our website. Barbara, it's been fascinating chatting to you. Thanks for sharing with us today.
Thank you very much for inviting me to talk.
My pleasure. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Bye.